You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil. This is episode number 5. We've got an exciting week for you this week. Lots of different things going on. And that's not just because the Sharknado 4 film has been announced as at the end of Sharknado 3, but because we have a fantastic Moto X and Motorola announcement, and a test of something that I tried a while back. Actually worked better than I expected. I'll cover that more in this week's app review. So, without further ado and much distraction from the episode, I'll jump right into it. So, the theme of this week's episode is sub-accounts. This is something I figured because we have a brand new Moto X, and Motorola's strategy behind the Moto series between the X, E, and G, so something to consider there. The app review is a launcher for Android with a lot of different features that extends various functions within your traditional launcher interface. So there's that. So definitely a big episode for this week. So sub-accounts by definition are accounts that are set up underneath header accounts to better track transactions and expenses. They're generally used with multiple departments within a company, vendors, customers, and that sort of thing. So if you're not in accounting, and as a refresher for accounting or new accountants out there, sub-accounts are generally used. So for example, let's say you have a number of different product lines, so an inventory you want to track as easily as possible, and as be as detailed as possible regardless of how much you actually use it. But if you have 5 product lines and then you have different colors, you want to make sure you set up different accounts for each product line and then sort them also by color. So let's say you want to look at all blue products, then you can have that filter and then filter by, let's say, blue, black, red, and green. But then also by product line, so if you have product line A, B, C, and D, you want to have those set up as well. And then those are all rolled up under inventory, so you can have a full list of inventory if you are able to export it, let's say, into Excel. You can filter by that specific product line, specific color, maybe product size. If you're in the services, maybe you want to separate by region or state, depending on how you have it set up. So accounts are set up that way. And then on the customer and vendor side of things, it is pretty much by default, but every customer has their own account, so you can set them up that way, or they're set up that way. But then also by customer type, so if they're more on the wholesale side, distributor side, consumer, whatever have you, you can have all those various categories, so you can see exactly how much is being bought in each category by customer. Since there's product lines, if that's that relationship is set up in the database, that as well. And then same thing on the vendor side, because you want to see who you're buying from, you want to see how much you buy from specific vendors, how much they're charging for pricing, and all of that good stuff. So that's kind of an overview, basics of how sub-accounts are used. They're obviously used for a lot more things. Same thing with expenses. You can have it set up to be filtered by, let's say, travel, food, entertainment, lodging, all of that. So if you want to see how much you're spending in all of those different categories, you have that tracking as well. And then by sales rep as well, so you can see how maybe if you think your travel expenses are high, you can see who's spending more for their flights than others, why more spend. Same thing with food and lodging, making sure you're getting a good return on investment. So that's an overview of sub-accounts. So with that, I will jump into, or I'll start off with Android news for this week. So to start it off, Microsoft quietly released a Android launcher this week called Aero Launcher. It's currently in beta. There is a Google Plus community set up. I did request an invite, but I still haven't been added. So there was a APK floating around on OneDrive, so I gave it a shot. Nothing too special about it. It's a 3-panel home screen launcher. So when you on your main screen, you have your frequently used and recently installed apps. On the left panel, you have recently contacted contacts with a shortcut to your contact list and dialer. The right screen allows you to set up notes and appointments and then mark them off as done, so you can keep track of things to do. It's basically a to-do list, so you can keep track of your to-do list. And then your dock has your standard four icon dock with the button for the home screen. Swiping up on it will allow you to add a few more icons. So if there's, let's say, more than four, if you want to set up folders, you can do that. So in case you have, let's say, four frequently used apps, and then you want to set up a few more less frequently used apps, you can do that as well. But beyond that, that's really about it. You can change your wallpaper, and there's a few settings that are not really of note. So that's really about it. I was going to do an app review on it, but I prefer to do it via the official channel so I could check out that process since I haven't or been added to it yet. Maybe when I am added, I will do a full walkthrough that way. But that's my initial thoughts. Nothing too fantastic, but if you want a quick and easy way to get to your contacts and set up reminders and have frequently used apps available, then it is launcher to go. It's pretty straightforward. Nothing too special about it. Fallout Shelter was announced that it's going to be set for release for Android in August of 2015, so that's coming up. Definitely look out for that. Google announced that Google Accounts will now be replaced as the back-end tool for all of Google's accounts, so rather than signing in with Google+, your Google account itself will be used. Some people were saying that it's marking the end of Google+, which has been going on since Google+ started. There was a good write-up I read on how it's not the end of Google+, I believe, and don't quote me on that, it was a Mike Elgin post, if I remember correctly. To me, it's more of using Google's or the things that were introduced as part of a Google Plus service and tearing them apart for individual use. So let's say you don't want to use Google Plus, its features and abilities are still usable for other features and services. The T-Mobile or the HTC One M9 on T-Mobile this week got the Android 5.1 update and Google Wallet, so look out for that. If you haven't seen it yet, it should be rolling out soon. Boxer 6 was released for this week for Android. It comes with a bunch of UI and performance enhancement, but also integrates a calendar into the app. So it basically matches the iOS counterpart at this time. A story was also released that Cyanogen Mod is not only going to be integrating Boxer as a stock email app for Cyanogen. I think it's Cyanogen Mod and Cyanogen OS, but I didn't see anything that differentiated the two. But they'll also be integrating the Boxer calendar into Cyanogen as well as an alternative to what the stock calendar offers. Google made the announcement that the backend for Google Voice is getting a big update with the ability of the 49% backend update, but Google Voice dictation specifically now supports third-party SMS apps. So if you use apps like WhatsApp and Viber and a few others of note, those are the two that I know about and use, you can tell Google, okay, Google, and it will be, you can send a message via those apps. So you can say, okay, Google, send a message via WhatsApp to whatever the contact name, and Google will recognize it. Google Search got an update with the ability to now tell you when a store is busy. So it figures it out based on your location. So if a number of people constantly visit a store, the hours of operation for the store, they will know, and then you do a Google search for the store, it'll tell you that, okay, the store may be busy right now, so here's a heads up. LG announced a new Android-based flip phone called the LG Gentle. It runs Android 5.1, has a 3.2-inch screen, a 3-megapixel rear camera, 4 gigs of storage, which is expandable, and 1 gig of RAM, so not too shabby. It's your low to mid-range phone, but because it is a flip phone, it should... at least the resources wouldn't be too intensive, and Android 5.1 should be able to handle it nicely. This week, OnePlus announced or released the details on the OnePlus 2. It's a 5.5-inch screen device with 4 or 3 gigs of RAM, which depending on which model you get, a 16 gigs or 64 gigs of storage, a 13 megapixel rear camera, 5 megapixel front camera, 4K video recording, a 3,330 milliamp hour battery, USB-C charging, and Oxygen OS based on Android 5.1. It does not have NFC, but it does have a fingerprint sensor and dual nano SIM card slots, so something to consider. So I know a lot of back and forth on the specs, especially the NFC. So if you use, for example, Android Pay or Google Wallet for your payments, that's obviously going to be a hindrance, so something to consider as far as that goes. For me, I don't use NFC too much, but it is nice to have that integrated. So that's definitely a turnoff for me, but for those of you who don't really care about NFC, it may be worth to buy. Google announced this week, for those of you who use Google Compute Engine, that users can now add their own encryption keys. So if you want to add an additional layer of encryption, that is now an option. So with that, I will jump into this week's Moto announcements. They announced an update to the Moto X line and a Moto G. So there are now two Moto X's. The Moto X Style, it runs Android 5.1.1, has a 5.7-inch screen, a 1.8 gigahertz hexa-core processor, 3 gigs of RAM, is water-repellent, has a 21-megapixel rear camera, a 4K video, dual flash, or dual rear flash, a 5-megapixel front camera with front flash, 3,000 milliamp-hour battery. It comes with 16, 32, or 64 gigs of storage. Micro SD card support up to 128 gigs. So definitely the high-end phone. So that's the Moto X Style. Definitely a phone worth checking out. Can't wait. I didn't see the pricing, but it should be available soon. I can't wait to see what the pricing on it is. It is available unlocked as well. I didn't see what the carrier support is. I'm sure it's compatible with most carriers, but definitely the flagship phone breaker, if you ask me. On the flip side, there's a Moto X Play that was announced. It also runs Android 5.1.1, has a 5.5-inch screen, a 1.7 gigahertz octa-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 21-megapixel camera, 1080p video, a 3630 milliamp-hour battery, and 16 or 32 gigs of storage. So while with traditional specs, it can be considered a high-end phone compared to the Moto X Style, it is in the mid-range device, so pricing, I'm sure, will be a little bit better. So if you want a little slightly better battery but don't mind a little bit lower specs, definitely check out the Moto X Play. So two new devices as far as mid to high-range specs go. Both Moto X are very good, so it's still close to stock. And it does come with the usual Moto X enhancements, and they should also be available via Moto Maker. So if you want to customize them, that will also be available. The third phone in the Motorola announcement was the Moto G 2015. It comes with a 64-bit processor, one or two gigs of RAM, 13-megapixel rear camera, 5-megapixel front camera, and 8 gigs of storage. So along the low-end side of the specs, but still a very good device, so definitely worth checking out. So we have three new devices, the low, mid, and high range, or in the low, mid, and high range categories, definitely worth checking out. So we'll see what other devices come out for this year, especially along the Samsung side of things. In other Android Google news, Google Translate got an update with 12 new languages, notably are including Bulgarian, Catalan, Czech, Danish, Filipino, Lithuanian, Norwegian, Turkish, and many others. So you can now easily do a text conversion. So if you're in Hungary or Indonesia, you can point your camera or open the Google Translate app, point your camera at a sign, and it will translate it to you into English. So definitely look out for that update, and definitely worth checking out. Phone manufacturer Blue also announced three new devices. The first is the Blue Studio C5 Plus 5. It runs Android 5, has a 5-megapixel rear and front camera, a 5-inch screen, 1 gig of RAM, 8 gigs of storage, and a 2,000 milliamp hour battery. So on the low and spec side of things. They also announced the Vivo Selfie. It's a 4.8-inch screen, Android, runs Android 5, has an 8-megapixel rear and front camera, 1 gig of RAM, 8 gigs of storage, and 2300 milliamp-hour battery. So a little bit better specs, but not too much of an improvement. And finally, they announced the Energy X Plus. It comes with a 5.5-inch screen, Android 5, 8-megapixel rear camera, 5-megapixel front camera, 1 gig of RAM, 8 gigs of storage, and a 4,000 milliamp hour battery. So not necessarily a high-end phone, probably still in the mid-range phone, but it should has a little bit better specs than the other two devices. This week, Google made an announcement or provided an update in regards to Google Project Loon. They will now be providing internet to Sri Lanka. So they should be launching their balloon shortly to provide 3G internet, at least. For those of you who use the Microsoft Xbox Music app for Android, it got renamed to Groove, so look out for that, in case you're wondering where that name went. Angry Birds 2 is now available for or on Google Play. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but in case you guys are interested in playing it, it is now available. Volkswagen announced that the Golf R is going to start getting or starting to roll out with Android Auto built in. So if you are looking at into getting a Golf, that hopefully is a deal maker. The remaining line of cars will get or start getting Android Auto in 2016. And finally, Google is working on a new office-ready version of Glass. It's the follow-up to the Explorer Edition. It's going to come with a smaller frame, longer battery life, and faster processor. So look out for that coming soon. But that is all for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's other tech news. So to start it off, HSBC and First Direct Banks are now supporting Apple Pay in the United Kingdom. So if you do bank with either one of those, they are now supported. You can add them into the app. Also in the United Kingdom, Amazon Prime Music is now available, so look out for that. You should be able to install by that, at least the Amazon App Store. I didn't see it in the, or there's a very compatibility in Google Play, but it is now available to install in the UK. Apple Music got added to T-Mobile's unlimited music streaming plan, so if you're on T-Mobile and have an iPhone, then that is now an option to use, so you don't have to worry about hitting your bandwidth limit or using too much data with Apple Music. Samsung announced a new monitor this week titled the SE370. There's two models, the 23.6-inch and 27-inch models. They have a 16:9 aspect ratio and 1920x1080 resolution, but that is not the feature of note. These two monitors are the first to come with built-in Qi or Qi wireless charging. It's the Qi wireless charging pad. So if you're looking to save space and you want a monitor that can charge your device, look, definitely check out the SE370. I'm guessing it works just like the regular Qi charging where you can put your phone down on it. It's probably built into the base or something like that, and you can charge your device, so definitely worth checking out. This week, Windows 10 started rolling out, so if you are one of the people who signed up for as a Windows 10, 7 or Windows 8 user to get Windows 10, look out for that. On the iOS side, Angry Birds 2 was also released for on the iOS platform, so look out for that if you have an iPhone or iPad. And finally, Amazon Music is starting to get a collection of acoustical recordings, so if you like acoustic sounds, definitely check out the Amazon Music app. The app is getting updated for Android, iOS, and Fire devices, along with the Echo and the website. So on basically almost anywhere you can get Amazon Music, you should be able to access the acoustical recording. So definitely worth checking out. But that is all for that. So after the short break, I will jump into this week's launcher review, film, and Star Wars profile. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you, because you can now help and support the show in three awesome and excellent ways. The first is by simply visiting patreon.com/patelN01 and check out some of the great milestone goals and rewards you get by simply donating as much as you're able, be it $1, $5, $20, whatever you feel comfortable with, to help the show expand in ways like adding more posts to the feed,
an Android app and removing ads, that sort of thing. So definitely check it out. That's patreon.com/patelN01. You can also get some great deals and discounts by visiting geek-io.net/support. You can get discounts on Tweaked Audio headphones, so you get some great audio while you listen to podcasts, movies, music, whatever have you. Or even by getting a discount on great security software provided by ProXPN. So definitely check that out. It's definitely worth your while, especially if you're on the geeky, nerdy side of things. Especially if you want to show that fandom and geekiness by wearing a t-shirt provided by T-Fury. So that's geek-io.net/support. Now, finally, let's say you love this show, you want to hear more and listen to more shows like it, you can visit patreon.com/geekio. Or visit geek-io.net and check out more shows like this and help support the network, help it expand and grow, help us host, do more and provide you with more and continued great content. That's patreon.com/geekio. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. And welcome back to the episode, everybody. Before I jump into what is going to be this week's app review, or the app review for this week, I wanted to also announce a brand new perk of being a Patreon supporter, a patron of the podcast, and that is for select reviews, be it app reviews, surface reviews, feature reviews, that are at least Android related, but if I'm able to do this for other reviews, patrons will get an early viewing of what the app review for, or what the review for that is going to be via a screencast. So once you support the show via Patreon, whatever level it may be, you'll get access to what the app review is going to be. It'll be probably be released a day or two ahead of that week's show, so you can take a look at it and see what the review is going to be. Get a walkthrough so you can see what I'm seeing. Look at what I'm talking about visually and all of that good stuff. The video will then be available for all subscribers as of when the show is released. So, or when that week's episode is released. So I'll have a link in the show notes so you can get a direct, or you can directly click on it and check out the video as well. So it's kind of like an early access preview of what's coming up ahead of, or coming up for that week's review. This is separate from the review that, or the preview of what's coming up on that week's episode that I've already started posting. So if you're a patron, then you'll see a post a day or two ahead of that week's episode for select items that are coming up. So the theme, the app review, movie, that sort of thing. So if you want to submit your questions, that's also available. So just a little bit of a heads up there. So if you support the show, then you get a little bit of extra perk that way as well. So with that, I am going to jump into this week's app review, which is actually technically a launcher called Action Launcher. I'll explain that in a little bit, but to help avoid any confusion, I will be reviewing Action Launcher version 3.5.2. In Google Play, it is listed as Action Launcher version 3. This is built upon more of the Android 5 look and feel, so more of the material design. Action Launcher version 2 is still available, but that is built more on the Hollow design principles, so a little bit of a change there. Both versions are equally very useful. There are a few changes in the feature set as far as how the developer wanted to release it, but for all intents and purposes, this review will be for Android 3. Action Launcher version 3.5.2. So upon installing it, it is a free app with certain limitations, but you can pay for it and get all features unlocked as far as theming and clicking and various other sub features that are a part of the launcher. But for the most part, many of the features are there for you to play around with, test, check out, see what's available. And in the YouTube, or the walkthrough link on YouTube that I posted, you'll see some of those various features in action as well to help make the decision. And in any case, and then if you also want to help the developer, that helps too. But once you install Action Launcher, it essentially, what a launcher does for Android, in case you're not sure or you're a little bit unclear of what they do, is it helps you Change the look and feel of your Android device from what the manufacturer of your device provides you. So be it a Nexus device, Samsung Galaxy S device, LG, Sony, whatever have you. You can install a launcher on most any Android device and it'll give you that same look and feel as if you installed that launcher on another device. That is an important thing I mentioned. I'll get into that in a little bit. But essentially, what I like about Action Launcher is that it provides a minimalist yet intuitive interface to extend how your home screen looks, and also help avoid any clutter that you might or that can develop actually over time with Android launchers. So with that, I'll jump right into it. The initial key feature that I like is the app drawer. So when you swipe right or from left to right on your screen, so that swipe right action, you'll open your app drawer and you'll have an alphabetized list of your apps. You can scroll up and down with your finger, be it thumb, pointer finger, however you're scrolling, or you can touch the letter and jump directly to all the apps with that letter. So if you're at the top of your app drawer, you can touch M and get direct or see your apps that start with M, so messaging, Messenger, Maps, all of that. Or let's say you touch P, you can get to Pandora, Pocket Casts, and whatever other apps you have start with P, and jump around like that, and you can go in any order you want. And then if you notice that you over-touched a little bit, so you touched R instead of S or T instead of U, then you can scroll up and down a little bit and jump that way as well. So very neat and clear app drawer, which I like a lot. It makes it a lot easier than your standard app drawer, be it the Google Experience Launcher, Nova Launcher, or anything like that. Those methods actually are not problematic or an issue at all. But for me, once you start getting into a lot of apps, it takes that much more time to scroll through your apps, especially on the Google Experience Launcher. In Nova, you can set your app drawer from vertical to horizontal, which makes it a little bit easier. So you can do the overthrow on the app drawer and get through your apps faster. But with this, you can at least, or with Action Launcher, at least you can touch the letters and jump around that way as well. The other feature that's pretty nifty is a quick page drawer. This is enabled by going to settings in desktop, or you can disable it in case you don't want to use it. You'll open it by swiping from right to left on your screen, and essentially it's used as an overflow. So let's say you have a wallpaper, you want to have your wallpaper, you want to hide widgets that you have but you still want quick access to. You can put them on your quick page, so all you have to do is slide from right to left and open it, and you get quick viewing of your be it widgets or apps, whatever you want. So you can put either one on the quick page, but essentially it hides away whatever you put on it, so you avoid having that clutter. If there's certain things you want access to, let's say you use certain apps once a week, then you can hide them away. Or let's say you want a weather widget but you don't really want to see it all the time, or if you have the Google Fit widget set up and you want to quickly see how many minutes you walked, you can put it there as well. Or in the example in the video, I put you can put your calculator widget there. So if you're going out for a restaurant or you need to calculate the tip, or you want to quickly calculate the tax rate or shipping or whatever you want for quick calculations, you can stick your calculator there as well. So it can be used for all sorts of things that maybe you don't use all the time, but you still want access to because you do use it enough. And the next feature that actually deviates from your standard launcher is the shutter. So what this does is, let's say you have your standard dock icons, whether it's four or five icons, and they have their widgets, and you want quick access to those widgets because, let's say you ran out of room on your home screen or home screens, or you want access to those functionality but don't want to have a widget because it affects battery life, that's where shutters come in. So what this does when enabled is you'll swipe up or down on the icon and the launcher will automatically open up the default widget for that app. So for the example of Pocket Casts, if you swipe up or down on the icon, it'll open the widget for Pocket Casts, so you can pause and play, rewind, fast forward, and touch on the icon to open the app. So let's say you want those quick access controls, then that is an option, and it makes it easy because the widget's not open all the time. It's only open when you need it to be. the same kind of media control on Pandora, for example, to pause, like, and forward track. So if you want that access. The other example is Facebook, if you want your stat to see the status updates or quick access to the buttons, but don't want to have the widget sitting open all the time, because it maybe does affect your battery life that much, or you don't really like how the widget looks with your device's UI color scheme. The other feature here in the shutters is that, let's say your app, the app that you want to have a shutter with, has multiple widgets available, then you can actually set a specific widget based on whichever one you prefer. So in the example of Feedly, you can set a specific folder and widget size. In the Facebook example, you can set the Facebook buttons or the Facebook status updates widget. So it's a 4x1 widget or a 4x2 widget, I believe. So if the option is there, you can select multiple widgets and be done with it. You can probably do a similar thing even with HD widgets. So if you want to have the icon on your home screen for the settings and then swipe to open a 4x2 weather widget, you can do that as well. So pretty nifty thing there. I don't use it myself because I don't really need too many widgets open to begin with. But if you want to have a widget open, then that is an option. Or if you have a standard icon and you want to open Zooper widget, then you can do that as well. The final nifty feature is what is called covers. It is an extension of folders, kind of like the extension of what Shutters provides icons. Covers lets you expand your folder's capability. So once you create a folder, let's say there's you have a whole bunch of apps that you use for one purpose. You have them in your folder, you like how they are, but there's one app that you use all the time. You always want to have quick access to it. And then everything else you use sporadically, it all depends on the circumstances, the time of day, that sort of thing. Then you can create a cover for that folder. So essentially the first icon in that folder becomes the default icon, and when you touch that that cover, it'll open that app. And then let's say you want to get into open a different app that's in that folder, you'll swipe on that icon and it'll open that folder. So for example, in my media folder, I have Pocket Cast, Pandora, Google Play Music, YouTube, and Amazon Instant Video. So I have a cover set up where the Pocket Cast is the first icon because I'm always using Pocket Cast. I'm listening to podcasts throughout the day. So I want to have quick and easy, access to open that app. So what I'll do is, what I did was I created a cover. So Pocket Cast is the first icon. Everything else is behind there. So I'll swipe on the icon and it'll open the folder so I can get to other items. But if I just want Pocket Cast, I can touch it and I'm good to go. So that's many of the features that are available in Action Launcher version 3. I believe it's also available to some extent in version 2, but don't quote me on that. I haven't checked recently. A couple of other features that are included that I also cover in the video are things like backing up and restoring your layout. So if you're if you reset your phone, then you can have that. If you're switching devices or updating your ROM, then, like, for example, if you use CyanogenMod, then you can do that as well. It also incorporates material design. So if you have that material design theme set up based on your wallpaper, then when you set your wallpaper to whatever you want, Action Launcher will try and set the colors for the app drawer and your folders to match that, as well as the Google search bar. And then it'll tell you that if the color matching was not accurate, it'll tell you that as well. If you want an app or a live wallpaper that actually works with Action Launcher, most do not. Meizu Live Wallpaper actually is compatible with Action Launcher, so you can set your wallpaper there and have Action Launcher set accordingly. So definitely worth checking out, definitely worth install. If you want to see some visuals on it, be sure to check out the video, and it's a good walkthrough of all the features that are available. The feature that version 3.5 introduces in Action Launcher is the Quick Bar. So if you want certain apps that you want even quicker access to, so they may not necessarily be app related. So for example, if you want a shortcut to the Play Store, your calculator, calendar, and your settings, then you can do that, and it's very customizable. You can reorder it. The icon is generally able to be determined based on the app icon, but if not, there's a preset list or set of icons that can be picked from. So definitely worth checking out. I do highly recommend it, and it is worth installing and also paying for the pro version for the full version to get all of the extended features. So be sure to check out Action Launcher. It is definitely worth a shot. So with that, I'll jump into this week's film review. Over the past week since last week's episode, I had a chance to watch the film for this week, and I've actually also been catching up on American Horror Story. I was able to finish season 2, Asylum. I've already started on season 3. I want to get through them as fast as possible because I'm hooked. Season 3 is called Asylum. So hopefully by the time I finish, season 4 will be available. I believe it's Freak Show, but I'm not 100% sure. I did start looking into that, but I haven't had a chance. Over the past week, Boardwalk Empire season 3 is also now available on Amazon Instant Video. So once I finish American Horror Story season 3, if nothing else is around, then I'm going to start on that. So that's the plan there. I did recently have an inkling to watch Superman, the old one with Christopher Reeve. I think it was Superman 2, the one with Zod, but it's not streaming. It is available for rental, so maybe that'll be something I watch soon. I have not decided what's up, but we shall see. But in any case, I will now jump into this week's film review, and that is everyone's campy movie, or new campy favorite movie, Sharknado 3. So I did have a chance to watch Sharknado 1 and 2. I believe I did review those for my old podcast, Real Insight, so I figured I'd continue since I watched it and see how it is and do a review here for that. So a brief bit of information on the movie is that it released in the United States and aired in the United States on July 22nd, 2015 on Sci-Fi. So I believe it's available online if you have for streaming if you have a cable subscription, but that's about it for now. A subtitle for the movie is Oh Hell No. It's said randomly in the movie. If you don't pay attention for that, like, 2 seconds, you may miss it, but it is during one of the shark action sequences, so you should be able to pick up on it. A summary of the movie, though, in case you're wondering what Sharknado is all about, is that a monstrous tornado unleashes ravenous sharks from Washington, D.C. all the way down to Orlando, Florida. A little bit of expansion on that is that while the first two Sharknados were more about single Sharknados in different places, this one is more about merging Sharknados and even bigger ones, so kind of making the catastrophe bigger and more badass and more crazy, so something to consider. The movie was directed by Anthony C. Ferrante. In case you're not sure who he is, this isn't going to probably help much, but he's also known for directing Sharknado 1 and 2, so same director, so consistent experience, pretty good. The cast does improve upon the first two, so there's a not only do Ian Ziering and Tara Reid reprise their roles in the movie, we do have a bunch of new cameos. So we have Frankie Muniz in here, David Hasselhoff, Mark Cuban, Chris Jericho, Ann Coulter, and many more. So definitely worth seeing just to see their roles in it. That's the bulk of the cast there. As of my last check, the movie was getting an IMDb rating of 51%. On Rotten Tomatoes, it was getting a 37% critic score and 84% score of people who want to see it. So I will preface it with the review at least by saying that the movie it's not necessarily a movie that you have to go see, but it is one of the, like, it's like one of those campy movies that kind of like the movies from the 80s where you know that it's not going to necessarily be anything fantastic or Oscar worthy, but it's worth seeing for the humor and just random hilarity of it, and just another disaster movie. And you know it's on Sci-Fi, so when you have the Godzilla versus Random Monster and other shark versus random monsters and Mega Shark and Ultra Shark and all that stuff, you know kind of where they're going with it, so you kind of know what to expect. Especially when you have Sharknado, you know it's going to be sharks in a tornado. So this movie kind of expands, though, on the other ones by making bigger sharks. I will eventually spoil kind of what happens later in the movie, because you kind of know if you've seen the first two that what's going to happen, but this one kind of changes that a little bit. So with that, I'll jump into the review. So I started off with, who builds a working golden trophy chainsaw anyways? So we start off the movie with Ian Ziering running really fast, looking like the tornado's already about to hit. I actually thought I had missed something when my recording had not started, but watching it, he's actually getting the citizens, the highest citizens commendation from the president for saving the two cities from the first two Sharknadoes. So he's being highlighted for that, for his heroic efforts there. And of course, if you're paying attention, eventually they do bring, or they have a noise or a newsreel about how no one knows if it's actually him causing the Sharknadoes to begin with, which is kind of funny to me. But he's given the medal, and he's also given a golden chainsaw, which for some reason is not a working chainsaw, which is kind of weird to me. I bring it up, and we actually know about it because he ends up using the chainsaw for a little bit to kill off some sharks when the first Sharknado of the movie lands. Next up, though, why does it seem like the parody of local news seems like there's no actual parody going on? So when we have the newscasters talking about the Sharknado's landing and the fact they're coming back again, it didn't actually seem like it was a parody to me. Maybe it's just me not really, or finding that the cheesiness of local news is kind of going going crazy and needs to be fixed and should be taken more seriously and less of the over the top, like, can you believe what's going on now kind of thing. So I don't know, it just didn't seem like a parody, and actually seemed like they were doing a real newscast and they're like, oh, can you believe what's going on now. Next up, how is it that the president and a civilian are the only ones who can take control of the situation? So we have the Sharknado early on in the movie landing down in Washington, D.C., ripping apart the White House. And it seems like while everyone else is running around trying to do stuff, most of the people were trying to run around, save people, get them to safety and all of that. But how is it that the president, or every single person, is taken out but the president and Ian Ziering? It just seems odd that no one else can be capable of even lasting just a little bit, or saying, okay, well, we have these weapons, so why not do it? Granted, they were going to get some more weapons, but how is it that they were able to use some sidearms and get out of the situation? Next up, and this is the spoilery part of the review, we actually have the main characters going up into space to destroy the lasers destroy the shark with some lasers, the Sharknadoes with some lasers, based on the Star Wars program from the Reagan administration, I believe it is. So they kind of brought that in to make fun of that a little bit, and then not necessarily make fun, but use a technology from that time period. So when this happened, I got to thinking that I think Dr. Evil wanted the lasers attached to the shark, not shooting the shark. So it was a bit of hilarity on my part. I think it was probably unintentional, unless they literally were doing a parody of the parody. But that made that part of the movie a little bit more fun for me, just because I got to thinking, well, maybe we need to have a Dr. Evil character, and maybe that's the character that David Hasselhoff becomes by living on the moon. Somehow he figures out, or he becomes a twisted evil genius, or builds a moon base, something along those lines. But finally, if there's no air in space, what exactly are the sharks breathing? So I got to figuring that sharks, on a dual note actually, now that I think about it, that sharks breathe air, and they're a water-based life form. So what exactly are they breathing that they're able to live long enough to attack a shark or attack the space shuttle? Granted, they were just launched at it, and maybe they were gasping for air, but it seemed more like a attack on the space shuttle. So I was just kind of wondering, what exactly are they breathing that they're able to continue to attack the space shuttle to begin with? So I don't know, that's a bit of a weird thing. So maybe it was more just of an attack and I'm overthinking it, but it did seem kind of odd, but totally over the top. So just another way of going more over the top than the last two movies. So if I was to recommend it, if it comes on Netflix or for free on Amazon Instant Video, it's worth watching. If you have a cable subscription, then I guess go for it. It's not something you have to see. I would recommend watching the first two movies just for the continuity of it. I mean, you're only really missing, it's only really an hour and a half or so per movie, so it's not like you're missing too much times. But just to keep that continuity, and just to see kind of where they started and where they go from there. So that is all for that. And also on the flip side, you're not missing anything if you don't watch it, but if you need something schlocky and campy to watch, definitely check it out. But that is all for that. So with that, I will jump into this week's Star Wars profile. So something to consider for as far as sub accounts go. When I was picking what I wanted to review for the Star Wars profile for this week, I know business is a big thing in the Star Wars universe. And so I got to thinking, what review could I do that really embodies a sub account and subterfuge and kind of something that's working under the layers, but works to fill the overlaying account or structure of the system. And I got to thinking about the relationship between Darth Plagueis and Darth Sidious, and it reminded me of a company called Damask Holdings. It is an organization led by Hugo Damask, otherwise known as Darth Plagueis. He's a magister as part of the Moon People, M-U-U-N. The group, though, Damask Holdings, is a financial group that's allied with the Intergalactic Banking Clan, so they had their own spire on the planet, so they were fairly wealthy and influential. It was run as a lobbying and political organization, so they used their finances and wealth to control other people and control big business and big government. The organization itself was founded 120 years prior to the Battle of Yavin by Hugo Damask. It also operated as a secret society for influential beings in the galaxy. They had annual meetings on Sojourn. Hugo Damask would determine who was the most influential and who and noteworthy and who could help them gain the influence and needed for the Sith's ultimate conquering of the Republic. This brings us to eventually how Damask met Palpatine, and this was because Palpatine released secret information about how there was plasma underneath the planet of Naboo, and he released this information to Damask Holdings, and that's what caught his eye. And eventually, once they met, that's when Damask found out about and detected Palpatine's force powers and took him as his apprentice. Eventually, the group was dissolved because of a surprise attack which killed all other members of the group. At this point, Damask ended up devoting his time to learning about how to manipulate midichlorians rather than rebuilding Damask Holdings. He had built up enough power and influence which allowed him to continue this study. So as I mentioned earlier, the job of the company in itself was lobbying and political maneuvering. So the idea was to gain wealth to further the endeavors of the Sith grand plan to take down the Jedi and establish Sith rule throughout the Republic. They ended up using political maneuvering to gain influence over planets and systems throughout the galaxy, which Damask taught Palpatine, and that is a backstory of why he was so interested in gaining influence over, for example, the members of the Trade Federation. So, once Palpatine fulfilled the rule of the Sith, where he killed his master on his Coruscant apartment, he ended up using the holdings and influence and wealth of Damask Holdings to further his political maneuvering and power and influence to gain even more power, which ended up leading him to take over the galaxy. The notable achievement of Damask Holdings and by extension Hugo Damask was the possible birth of Anakin Skywalker. It is rumored, though not confirmed as far as I could tell, that the result of Damask's manipulations of the Force to extend his own life and chi death was the creation of Anakin Skywalker himself as a birth in the fourth or birth in the Force. So that is the possibility there. It's not sure if that was confirmed by Damask. There wasn't anything in the novel that I remember, and Palpatine wasn't 100% sure, as he didn't know about all of Damask's testing and abilities, but by the end of Damask's life, he was able to bring, you know, key people surviving in regeneration through midichlorians in the Force, so it is possible it was done, but it's hard to say how it was done to begin with. But that is all for that. So a bit of fun fact is that Qui-Gon Jinn actually ended up meeting Hego Damask at least once and telling him that, and I quote, "discontent in the outer rim or outer systems isn't keeping with the aims of Damask Holdings, is it not, Magister?" So it's something that Qui-Gon Jinn noted about Damask Holdings, that any dealings that he had with the outer systems was in turmoil and seemed to benefit him greatly. So while it wasn't anything that Qui-Gon Jinn may have known for sure, it's possible he suspected that something was happening and Damask Holdings was related to it. But in any case, that is all for the Star Wars review. So with that, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can leave me, or you can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. And of course, if you want to get all the subscription links, past episodes, and all of that good stuff, you can visit PatelN01.com. And of course, you can find more shows like this on the Geek.io network by visiting geek-io.net, and also getting links to both Patreon accounts, sponsors, and all of that good stuff. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.